Oh my goodness, another bad movie.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a public service announcement. For regular viewers and listeners of AWI Pod, please do not be offended, as this program contains good wrestling. It's my life in the box in front of me. Taking talk in my arms is the soul of me. You walk by, ask to see me lay face down.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Warring to Attitude. This is episode 54. I am your host, Brent Piles, as always, and with me as I venture down the year 1997, the year in the WWF, I already said year, is my tag team partner, who is from the across the ocean and from the future. He is the Barroom Brawling Disco Dancing Dynamite Stretching into Continental Playboy. Folks, he's more over than rubbing blood all over a belt that says Mama Rhodes on it. At Gia Russell and Glenn Abbott. Glenn, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. And congratulations on managing to untie your tongue as you were speaking there.
I am able to do that. Sometimes I am. Sometimes I'm lucky, sometimes I'm not. So, but this time I was able to untie my tongue, as you say.
And talking about Mama Rose. Was that a good Raw or what? I know you haven't seen all of it.
I can't speculate to all of it, but I saw the very beginning, and I saw the very end, and those were both very good.
It was a very good show from beginning to end. It started hot, and it finished hot, and it didn't cool down in the middle. It was perfect.
And I don't know what it was, but like, so Cody's talking in the ring all of a sudden that, you know, if you smell hits, and The Rock comes out and they've got the camera like facing Cody in the ring, and you see the lightning bolts of The Rock coming out, and then the spotlight shines on him right at the lightning bolts hitting. And just like the way it looked was really cinematic. It was one of the most cinematic shots I've seen in wrestling in a long, long time. It was really well done.
Yeah. And as the mayor said, that ending, that was shot better than a lot of films, a lot of movies.
Yeah, the ending was really, really good. I watched that on YouTube this morning after you told me, guys, after you guys told me to check it out. And I was going to go and watch Raw this morning too, but I couldn't. It wasn't on Hulu yet, so I'm at the mercy of Hulu to when they finally put it up. And then I will watch it, but I'll only be able to watch the hour and a half version because they only have a shorter version of it, which is...
Yeah, that's all right. You'll get everything in an hour and a half that you need to.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured, yeah. So, yeah, but we'll discuss the week in wrestling further on Friday night when we talk to the mayor, because I'm sure he's going to have his thoughts about what took place. And we're going to do our top 10 WrestleMania matches. We'll all have our top 10s ready. I want everybody to have 10 matches, and then you can have a couple honorable mentions, too. So we'll give everybody get 10, and everybody also get a couple of honorable mentions that we'll talk about, too. So make sure you tune into that. That'll be out on Sunday. You'll be able to check that out on YouTube or whatever podcast app you get. That should be a lot of fun. So
I'm glad you reminded me about that, because my head is like a sieve at the moment. I literally only watched the Raw we're about to review about an hour ago.
Well, oh boy. Surprisingly, Glenn, I was prepared. I had already watched the show, took all my notes, and made all the clips that I needed to make before this morning, and which I usually don't. Usually, I tell you, I got 30 minutes and I need to make these clips. I'm usually rushing to do it. So it was nice that I actually had the shit done and I was ready to go, because I'm usually not. So.
You've got my organization skills this week and I got yours.
Yeah. We're also doing another WrestleMania 8 review this week. And I've watched one match from that show thus far. So
I haven't watched any yet.
So I had to work that in at some point.
I'll watch that tomorrow, but there's nothing on tomorrow. So.
I'll probably watch it tonight. I usually watch NXT when it comes on Peacock the next day, because I don't really have cable, and sometimes the ways that I watch NXT don't really work out as well, and so I don't want to be annoyed by it. That's what happened last night. I tried to watch Raw, but I was getting so annoyed by the nefarious means that I had to go through to watch it that I finally just said fuck this and turned it off. After I saw The Rock whisper in Cody's ear. It's a Manchester City hate week, Glenn.
It certainly is.
We're four or five days away, Glenn, and I'm already a nervous wreck.
I'm not actually.
No?
No, I'm confident.
Oh, Glenn, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Usually you're the pessimistic one.
I know, but this time, I actually think we've got the beat. You know, I don't know what it is, but I think we've got the beat. You know, I think that, especially if Kyle Walker's out, their defense is forgetting at.
Oh, really? I didn't know Kyle Walker was out.
Well, he limped off from the England game the other night, so.
And then I know DeBron missed their FA Cup game, but I haven't seen anything about, you know, him missing this game. And it looks like we're going to be back at full strength. It seems that Martinelli, Gabriel, Jesus, and
none of them traveled. None of them traveled to their international sides, so they've all been rehabbing on a beach somewhere, which is always a good sign.
Yeah, I read something that this probably isn't true. It was like Ben White plays Uno on the beach in Dubai while his English teammates play a game against Brazil. I thought that was funny.
Good luck to him. If he's got an issue with the manager, then good luck to him. No, you don't have to play for your country. Nothing says you'd have to.
I saw people like relating to like, oh, well, you're disrespecting every person whose family has served in the military. And I kind of thought, like, that's taking it a little far, don't you think? I mean, it's just a game.
Yeah. That's not exactly true, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a game. And look, here's the thing about it, too. I've been on teams before. If there's somebody on your team who don't want to be on your team, you don't want him there anyway.
That's right. That's exactly it.
Yeah. So I love Ben White. Benny Blanco, I love him. He's one of my favorite players on our squad, but I know some people feel
he certain. Always knew that Kyle Walker would get the nod over him at right back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And while I don't like Kyle Walker and I love Ben White, Kyle Walker probably should get in over him, rightfully so, probably.
I wouldn't have said so, not on current form.
Not in current form, you're probably right, not current form, but like if you look at overall record and career, you would probably.
I'm quite happy that he's been sitting on a beach in Dubai while Kyle Walker's been getting himself injured.
Same.
I wish injury on anybody, but...
Yeah, I don't want to see anybody hurt. I mean, I hate DeBrowner, and I hate Haaland, and I hate Kyle Walker, and I hate Jack Grealish, but I don't want to see anybody injured. I just don't. Uh-huh. If you wish injury on someone, I just think you're a pretty shitty person because you shouldn't be hoping that someone gets hurt because like we just said, it's only a game.
Yeah.
So if you're wishing injury on your rival team's players, I think you're taking it a bit too far, at least from my liking. But you know what? We'll talk more about that next week after hopefully we defeat Manchester City and remain at the top of the league. Let's keep our fingers crossed, Glenn. But for today, we're going to talk about some 1997 wrestling. It's from October 27th, 1997, Glenn. The Tulsa Convention Center. Can you guess where that is, Glenn? The Tulsa Convention Center. Any idea?
No, it's where Jim Ross comes from.
It's in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, that's it. Yes. I had it in my head, but I couldn't think of what the state was.
But yes, that is the home state of one Mr. Jim Ross. This building opened actually in 1964, so it had been open for a while. It was a regular stop for Bill Watts Mid-South Wrestling and then its successor, the UWF. It is now known as the Cox Convention Center. Not a lot of big pro wrestling shows took place here at this arena. No pay-per-views or anything. In fact, this is the only episode of Raw to take place this show. It mainly had house shows from WWF and WCW in the late 80s and early 90s. It's still open today, but it doesn't really do concerts or wrestling shows. It's more like corporate events. So you can't attend any concerts or wrestling shows at this arena anymore. But if you are, you own some sort of business in Tulsa, you can rent this convention center.
Okay.
So there you go, Glenn. Pretty eventful show last week. I mean, we got the debut of the New Age Outlaws. DX finally got their name. So I had pretty high hopes going into this show. The first thing I noticed after the pyro, the first sign I saw was a sign that said, Bill Clinton wants Sonny, which I'm sure he did.
As most people did at that time.
As most did in 1997, yes. That's right. So we open the show with the Nation of Domination making their way to the ring. They're going to do an in-ring promo with Vince. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Reverse racism.
Yeah, that's basically what was happening here. They were talking about what happened in their locker room last week. Vince tries to tell Farouk that he's sorry, and Farouk says, you know, you can't just say sorry and make it okay. The Rock had a really weird shirt on.
Yeah, that shirt with a big white R on it.
Just a huge R on it. That's all it was. It was just a big R. It was really weird. I was like, what the hell? They finally kick Vince out of the ring. The Rock gets on the mic. He challenges the Hearts to a match. Which brings the Hearts out onto the ramp. Brett says that they will take them on in any kind of match they want. But Brett says he comes from a country where they have no racism. They love people who are who they are in Canada. And then Brett says that Farouk can't see that someone else is playing with him and that Shawn Michaels and Hunter did this and they're trying to, you know, wedge something between the Hearts.
Everybody can see it apart from Farouk.
Yeah, Farouk's the only one in this building who doesn't know it. That makes HBK pop up on the screen on the TitanTron. He says, how dare Bret Hart blame this on DX? He did this a couple times. He referred to Bret as the Grand Wizard.
Yes.
And I don't know if you know anything about the KKK, but that's like KKK member.
The leader of the KKK is the Grand Wizard.
The Grand Wizard, yeah. So he called him that a couple of times and even says that he's in the KKK, which is not good to do, and you certainly wouldn't do that now. But even in 1997 terms, you look at that and go, ugh.
There was a little bit of 70s soul mixed into this by Farouk that I'm sure a lot of people would have missed. He goes on about... And he's going on about taking it out on the Heart. He says it started with a boat ride and it'll end up with a black fist upside your head.
I like that. I'd forgotten that he said that, but I did like that. And then so finally the Nation runs up the ramp and they start like beating the Hearts out of the top of the ramp. They make it look like Bret may have an ankle injury because he's supposed to be defending the championship against Ken Shamrock this evening. So that's kind of where that segment ends. And I'm not sure if we're getting a match between the Hart Foundation and the Nation or if we're not. I don't know. I don't think I ever really got that answered. So
no, I don't think you did.
I don't think we do. The very first match of the evening is a match that me and Glenn have seen many, many times over our watchings of 1997. And that is Goldust versus Triple H.
Yes. And everybody seems to be excited for it. Don't know what.
They must have forgotten that we watched them wrestle 25 times already.
Yeah.
I mean, that match at WrestleMania.
And Marlena obviously forgot that the amount of times that China had ragged Goldust so far.
Yeah, I just kind of thought that was weird that it was just like they made you just like you weren't supposed to remember any of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like
that's it.
I don't know. Yeah. So Shawn Michaels comes out and gets on commentary too. He joins Vince and JR. China, of course, gets involved, slams Goldust on the ramp. I mean, the match was fine, but it like wasn't overly great. It wasn't bad. It was just fine.
I loved the thing that added to this was the Rick Rude being the ring announcer for Triple H. What was it? The fat tells the tubs of crap to pay some respect for the king of the ring. Oh, also, Hunter is the future of World Wrestling Federation. Boy, was he right about that.
I wrote that in my notes as well. I said, well, he knew it. Rick Rude knew what he was talking about, didn't he? He was absolutely right. He is the very much future of the World Wrestling Federation. Goldust tosses Hunter out of the ring at one point, and Marlena starts like slapping him in the face, which she does this right in front of the referee, but it doesn't lead to a DQ, which was really strange. And if I was Marlena, after everything China did to me, I wouldn't even go anywhere near Triple H.
No, I wouldn't.
No, not at this point. Marlena's a lot tougher than I am. So the ref's busy with China and Marlena, and then he grabs gold. He almost has Marlena's purse. Triple H kind of grabs it out of his hand and he whacks him in the head with it.
Because
picks him up, gives him pedigree.
Because there's no King this week, JR feels like he has to be a bit, shall we say, insensitive with his wording. Where Vince is going on about, where is it, about the goose and the ganders. Well, yeah, JR just comes out. Vince was saying something about goose and gander, and JR just comes out. China, nobody knows if she's a goose or a gander.
Oh, I must have missed that. Yeah, no, that's totally up. That's up to King's Alley, 100%.
Yeah,
yeah, so that's what it was. It wasn't Hunter. Goldust went in the ring, took the person, blasted him in the head. Goldust in the head, and then Hunter got in, picked him up, pedigreed him, and got the win. So I don't know. The first match was fine, but it wasn't anything to write home about.
Nah.
We then got another rant from Jim Cornette, and I kind of like this one. So let's
good. Yeah.
Jim Cornette, I just wonder if any of you are sick and tired as I am of people who claim to be the icon of wrestling. Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper claim to be the icon. Shawn Michaels is the icon that can still go. Bret Hart would claim to be the icon if he wasn't too busy crying about being screwed by the WWF. And I guess Randy Savage is still thinking. Well, Shawn Michaels is still the single most talented athlete in wrestling today inside the ring. But outside, he's an adolescent obnoxious jerk who takes his tights and goes home if he doesn't get his way. Bret Hart is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, but if he'd have been screwed as many times as he claims, he'd have struck oil by now. And Randy Savage is a legend, but let's face it, how many records did Frank Sinatra sell last year? But the pinnacle of this icon garbage came at last night's cage match between Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper to determine in their minds only who the real icon is. WCW had the gall to say this is the greatest cage match in history when it was only the greatest in 3 weeks since Hell in the Cell. But here you've got a 46-year-old bald movie star wannabe who looks like Uncle Creepy with a good build taking on a guy with an artificial hip that hadn't wrestled a full schedule in 10 years. It's a tribute to the massive egotism in my mind of both men and an indictment of WCW's promotional policies that this match even took place, much less being the main event when the card was probably the best that WCW is capable of having. By the 10-minute mark, they were sucking wind so bad, the first three rows passed out of oxygen deprivation. Would have been funny if it wasn't so sad. Well, I'm sick and damn tired of hearing guys claim to be the icon, especially when it usually comes from guys who just didn't know when to quit. Roddy Piper was my idol when I was a teenager, but that was 20 years ago. Hulk Hogan during his best years was 50% media creation, and those are long gone. This match was a slap in the face to every wrestler that takes pride in his profession. In my mind, no one man is bigger than this sport, but if there is an icon, it would be a man who has great ability inside the ring and professionalism and maturity outside of it. Let's leave all the petty backstabbing, I make more money than you BS with the hat check girl and concentrate on talent and attitude. The Undertaker, Ric Flair, and Steve Austin have never claimed to be icons, which means they're big candidates to be just that. And on a personal note to Hulk Hogan, you are a household word, but so is garbage. And it stinks when it gets old.
And it stinks when it gets old, too.
That didn't age well, did it?
Especially, the Ric Flair one definitely didn't age well, because I'm pretty sure Ric Flair considers himself an icon.
Well, and not only that, if you think that by 2003, both Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper were back in the WWF, or WWE as it was by then, and they were trying to capitalize on the old people that were actually kicking WWF's ass at this time.
Yeah.
In the ratings.
I think that's why they're doing it, because they're trying to make them look less than, even though they're beating them in the ratings, which I always find it funny, too, that they run down how old they are, but then they're going to bring them all back.
Yeah.
And WCW finally goes away, which I guess that's wrestling, though, right?
That cooks ease.
After that, they show highlights of something they did before the show, honoring the legends of Oklahoma wrestling. They, of course, honor JR, Cowboy Bill Watts, the Briscoe Brothers. And Danny Hodge, who they said is the greatest wrestler the United States has ever produced. So I looked this guy up. I've heard of Danny Hodge, but I don't know anything about like his wrestling credentials. No. So he was at Oklahoma as a wrestler. He was 46-0, winning the NCAA championship 3 years in a row from 1955 to 1957. He even won a silver medal in the 1956 Olympics. But then he became a pro wrestler in 1959, and he wrestled pro wrestling until 1983. So a very, very decorated amateur wrestler.
Mm.
I also watched a video of him as like a 80-year-old man smashing an apple literally crushing it with his hand. Yeah. He was like 92.
They made those old boys tough.
They fucking sure did. They don't make them like that anymore, that's for sure. No. Well, because he'd been fucking working on his family's farm since he was fucking three. That's why.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
That's fucking why. The next match is the Intercontinental Championship match. It's Owen Hart versus the clear and outright number one contender for the Intercontinental Championship because he's done so much to earn it. Ahmed Johnson.
And guess what? Ahmed's all taped up and injured again.
Yeah, that's what I wrote in here. I said the real question is he going to be able to have the whole match without hurting himself?
No. It sounds to that.
He can't do it. He's not capable of wrestling a match without hurting himself.
No. This is where it gets confusing. With the nation coming out, I'm thinking, now, is he a babyface? No, yeah, he's a babyface. He's not with the nation anymore. Because he keeps getting injured.
Yeah, a lot of interesting. I didn't understand why is he facing anyone for an Intercontinental Championship? I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I think it was just a case of they had him ready. He was out the back and sweated up, so they brought him out.
They were like, why not? Johnson at one point grabs the Canadian flag, rips it up hard, starts kicking it around the ring. Owen Hartman gets into his face and slaps him in the face, which wasn't a good idea.
That was the most weak-ass attempt at the disrespecting any flag that I've ever seen.
It was also the most impressive thing, or the thing that got the biggest reaction from the crowd out of Ahmed Johnson this entire match. So
it's true.
Yeah, after Owen slaps him, he starts running around the ring to, you know, get away from him. The referee finally gets in between the two, and then Ahmed turns around. Ahmed picks the referee up. Yeah. And so when he turns around to pick the referee up, Owen just kicks him square in the balls. Which I thought was great.
Yeah. Ahmed and run are two terms you can't really put together. He sort of lumbers.
Well, yeah, he's not much of a runner. The nation comes out on the ramp to watch on during the match. Owen slam. He takes Ahmed's already injured hand and like picks the ring step up and like slams them in between the two. And how that didn't explode Ahmed's entire arm, I'll never know. Not because Owens has been not a bad worker, just because Ahmed seems to always get injured.
Yep.
That's the only reason why I
say. All I can say is thank God for Steve Austin.
Yeah, this match was a bit boring.
I don't know. I don't know why he came in and stunned Ahmed Johnson. Why babyface Steve Austin when he's got so many heels after him? Wants to come in and stun another babyface? I don't know.
But well, he doesn't want Owen to lose the belt because he wants to beat Owen for the belt at Survivor Series.
Yes, of course it is.
That's the logical reason behind this. And now, what's something for Ahmed to do? Yeah, so Austin comes in, hits the stunner. Ahmed wins by DQ, but Owen keeps the belt. So then we got what was one of my favorite parts of the show, Glenn. It is the 1997 Karate Fighters Holiday Tournament, and I love this shit because these are very popular toys when I was young, and I absolutely had some of these, and so I just fucking love it whenever this comes on. I don't know why. It's just nostalgia, I guess. But I love these fucking Karate Fighters things.
Have you got the ad?
I don't have the ad. I did not put the ad up.
Oh, that's right.
So, yeah, it's a father versus son matchup as Brian Christopher takes on his daddy, the King. Of course, the King cheats to start by pretending he wants to shake hands and then, you know, starts twisting the... If you don't know what Karate Fighters are, they were like these little action figures that you stuck on this thing that like spun them back and forth and you twisted this thing to make them spin and then they would kick. And they had these little sensors on their chest. Yeah. And if you hit the sensor, it would knock the guy off and you would win. Mm-hmm. And so King starts twisting his before Brian Christopher's ready, which works because, of course, the King wins and he's heading to the quarterfinals. Let's look at the matchups on this here.
Bruce Prichard said JR was hilarious, though.
Oh, that was really good. Yeah, they did a whole big setup for it. So here's the first round matchup. See, the King beat BC, which is Brian Christopher. And then we're going to have El Matador, which I assume is Tito Santana.
Yeah.
He's going to take on Carlos, and I'm assuming that's Carlos from Los Boricuas.
First, yeah.
D.O.K. is Doc Hendricks, maybe?
It must be.
I don't know what the fuck Shrimp Scampi is.
Shrimp Scampi.
I mean, I know what Shrimp Scampi is, but I don't know how that works. And then Sonny is going to take on two guys, which he's done before. Greg and Adam. Also in the first round. So there you go. There's your Karate Fighters tournament matchup. Glenn, who do you got winning this whole thing? Who are you picking?
I actually know. I know who won this.
Well, don't pretend like you don't know and pick somebody.
All right. I'll go with Shrimp Scampi then.
Thank you. Thank you, Glenn. I'm glad you picked Shrimp Scampi.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah, fact, sir.
I've got to pick El Matador because I love Tito Santana. Arriba! So yeah, I love it. I love the Karate Fighters.
Yeah, no, I can remember the final very well.
Don't tell me, Glenn. I don't want it to be spoiled. I want it to be a surprise. The next thing is Mankind makes his way down.
If you think of who's in this, it doesn't come as much of a surprise if you work out what the ending will be.
Oh, you know what? If I looked at the bracket, I think I know who it is, but I don't want to know, Glenn. I want to be surprised. So Mankind makes his way down to the ring to talk about, you know, what happened last week with Kane attacking Dude Love.
This was good.
This was really good, and we're going to watch it.
Good.
Love just wanted to make people smile. He wanted to have fun. He wanted the people to have fun. He wanted to make the world just a little bit happier place. And Paul Bearer, what you did was you took an innocent kid and you ruined him. And you have left me here to pick up the pieces. So Uncle Paul, what disturbs me is this. You and I parted ways without a single cross word. And I thought we had an unspoken truce. You don't bother me, and I don't bother you. Well, what you did to Dude Love last week bothered me a great deal. And now I am left with no choice but to make your life. So if you think Kane is going to roll over everybody and root to the Undertaker, then I am serving notice that you just ran into one hell of a roadblock. Think back, Uncle Paul, before you gloat, to the Boiler Room Brawl. Buried alive. Matches they said no human being could endure. Well, I will take on your Kane, or I'll damn sure die trying. So, Uncle Paul, why would you take Kane, a man who spent the last 20 years inside a would-be grave, and present him with the opportunity to return so soon? Because I will take him on, 7 feet tall, I don't care, impervious to pain, I'll find a...
Yeah, that was really good. while he's doing this, the Sarge starts to make his way down to the ring. He gets in and tells Mankind that he knows why he wants to face Kane. He understands why he wants to face Kane, but Mankind is a shaky mental state. I think that's an understatement, probably. And that Kane is not a rational human, which I also think is a major understatement. And so he says he can't sanction that match. Mankind says, well, would it help if I said please? It doesn't help. The Sarge still says no. The Mankind says, well, then if I can't face Kane and do something bad to him, then something bad has to happen to you. And he puts the mandible claw on the Sarge. So the Sarge has been at this job for only a few months. He's gotten his ass whipped by Stone Cold Steve Austin and Mankind. It's not good to be the Sarge.
Congratulations, Mankind, on becoming a face. By turning on Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah, people hate him. They were over. This was over with the people. They finally are able to get the Mankind to let the commish go, and he heads to the back. We then get the whole restart of the show with the pyro and everything, and then we're going to start the second hour with Bret Hart defending the WWF Championship against Ken Shamrock. I'm pretty excited to watch this one, just because I think they could have done a lot more with Ken Shamrock, and I think a Bret Hart-Shamrock feud could have been really good if it would have been prolonged. So I was really excited to see this match when they
This is what pisses me off, is that the Montreal Screwjob never needed to happen.
Yeah.
They had Shamrock win this tonight and then have Sean go over on Shamrock. They could have played into the Bret Hart Shamrock feud as the number one contender to get back at Sean. And down the line, you could have had, perhaps in the next WrestleMania, had Sean against Bret Hart.
Right.
But no, they decide that this is going to be a total balls up. I'm going to say something else, but...
You can say whatever you want, man. We don't care. Yeah, so they're asking about his Bret's ankle hurt. He's not, he doesn't look to be limping. They also tell us that the King wasn't at the show this evening because he must have had a World Series hangover. So I looked into what that meant. I know that the King is a big Cleveland Indians fan. Apparently, this was the year that they lost the World Series to the Florida Marlins in 7 games. And that's why he wasn't here, because his World Series hangover. I'm very sorry to bring up bad news, Mayor of Canton. Really sorry. If it makes you feel any better, this is also the year that the Marlins beat the Cubs in the NLCS to go to the World Series. So we both got hurt this year, Mayor, if that makes you feel better. We were both hurt in 1997.
It's nothing new, though, is it?
No, we're used to it. And then the Cubs hurt him even more when we beat the Indians in the World Series. But that's neither here nor there. Sorry to bring up old stuff. I thought the match was good while it was going, but we just didn't get a really good ending to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's go through all the dodginess of the unconscious referee again. And even if they do... Why is it some matches they ever heard a referee suddenly come to the ring and make a decision, and others like this one, they're all conspicuous by their absence?
Well, I mean, just at the end of the match and everybody's brawling, they got 15 referees out here, but it's like, where were you motherfuckers when this guy passed out?
That's right, exactly.
That's something you can ask about in any age of wrestling ever, because it's always like that. Sometimes there's 50 referees, and sometimes you can't fucking find a referee anywhere. Sometimes you could throw a rock and hit one, and sometimes you don't know where they're at, where any of them are at. It's like they all go on their lunch break at the same time or something. What the fuck? Some good mat wrestling, some good submission wrestling. You know, Bret puts the figure four on the ring post on Ken Shamrock, and I really like the pacing of this match because it started slow and then it built, and that's the way I like my wrestling matches to go. I don't like my wrestling matches where they jump in there and it's all balls to the wall right at the beginning. Start slow and then build the pace.
Especially when you've got the USC submission champion
right
against probably the best technical wrestler in the world. You'd expect it to be a little bit of a arm bar and ankle lock and very technical stuff, wouldn't you?
Right. It's what you would expect to see these two in the ring, yeah. I also thought that Shamrock was doing a tremendous job of selling his knee in this match. Like, you could almost feel the pain in his face. He was doing a great job. Or maybe it just genuinely hurt, but I don't think it probably did. Anything, any other notes from this one that you had?
No, it's just that, Bret Hart clearly tapped out.
Yeah.
Well, they couldn't have Shamrock win it. You still end up with the same thing down the line, but you don't end up having to have the Montreal screw job.
There's probably a lot of things that could have happened way before this that could have stopped the Montreal screw job from happening. But yeah, This is one of those things where you look at like, well, that could have been a good option. You could have just had Brett lose it to Shamrock, and then you could have had Shawn Michaels and DX screw Shamrock and get the belt back on Shawn.
Especially not 2 weeks before. Why is he having a championship match 2 weeks before?
Yeah, I didn't understand why this was even taking place. I mean, I get it because it's a good match, but like there was no build to it. It's not like Bret Hart and Shamrock were in a feud. You know what I'm saying? He was just like fighting with the LOD versus the Nation last week, and now he's facing Bret Hart for the championship. Like, explain it to me.
I loved it that Shamrock totally lost it with Shawn Michaels, though.
Yeah.
There was a point there he went big shooty bad man on him.
Yeah, that was good.
And it took Hunter trying to. And a few others to pull him off.
Yeah, it took quite a few. Yeah, so like there's Brett tries to go for the sharpshooter, but Shamrock reverses it into an ankle lock. And while they're like rolling, doing that, they knock the referee down. Brett's clearly tapping out. And so Shamrock thinks he's won, but there's no ref. He tries to get the ref up. Brett grabs a chair that he brought into the ring earlier. He hits Shamrock in the back with it. Brett then locks the sharpshooter in, but then Shawn Michaels comes in, hits the ring, super kicks Brett. He starts beating up on Bret Hart. I almost said Bret Michaels, which is the guy from Poison. Bret Hart, not Bret Michaels. He wasn't there. The kid gets up, sees what Shawn Michaels has done, and freaks out, and he literally just starts laying waste to Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Luckily for Shawn, DX comes and gets him off of him, and some WWF officials. Like I said a minute ago, we couldn't find a referee, but now all of a sudden there's five of them.
Yep.
And then we get, you know, Brett and Shawn start fighting with each other. They have to separate them a couple times. A fun match, and it built more to the story of HBK and Bret Hart. So I mean, it was what it needed to be. I thought
it was. It was. But it was a good match spot by a hokey ending.
Yeah, definitely. We then hear from a very angry Bret Hart. He says, after Survivor Series, he won't have to worry about Shawn Michaels anymore. Boy, is he wrong. And all of his fans in Canada will be behind him. And when it's all said and done, HBK won't be able to run across that border of the United States fast enough, he says.
That was true.
Yeah.
With the belt, though.
50% of that was right. But unfortunately, he would probably have to worry about Shawn Michaels for many more days.
Yeah, where still is.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I actually think a couple of years ago that Shawn said they'd finally sort of buried the hatchet, but.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that there's still not some bit of animosity there.
Oh, yeah, of course there will be. Bret Hart isn't the sort of guy that to forgive and forget, is he?
Bret can hold the grudge. I love Bret Hart, and I don't want to like bash him or anything. And I mean, I get it too because I can also hold the grudge, so I understand where he's coming from. But you can't let something poison you for so long. You know what I mean? And the longer that you hold on to that, you're not hurting that person. You're hurting yourself because you're the one who's carrying it with you every day. So eventually you got to shed it and you got to let it go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like I said, I love Bret Hart and I don't want to dismarch him.
Shawn's obviously done that. Whether right. Bret done it, who knows? Right. Only he knows.
Only he knows. Exactly. The next match is we've got the newest tag team in the WWF taking on a very old gimmick that we're trying to make new. It's the New Age Outlaws, which they're very new aged and outlaws, against the new Blackjacks, who are not very new, but they still are Blackjacks, I guess.
Still Blackjacks.
I don't know how long they've been around in the WWF for, but I don't think it's working.
I think they've had about 3 matches in a year.
Something like that, yeah. Something like that, yeah. Last week, New Age Outlaws beat the Headbangers after bashing Thrasher over the head with a boombox. They keep on pushing this Survivor Series flashback show that they're having on the USA Network the day after this. And they keep talking about how you'll see Hulk Hogan when he was still good and not over the hill. And I thought it was They trash talked him for so long, but tune in tonight to see Hulk Hogan. Remember that guy we told you sucked and is in bad movies? Well, turn in tomorrow night. Watch him wrestle for us. It'll be fun. What did you think about this tag team match?
It was fun. You could see how they ended up being part of DX.
Yeah, they fit in perfectly. Makes perfect fucking sense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The way they ran away was so part of DX, it was untrue.
I mean, they're even better in the, at the end when we'll talk about them when they come out for the LOD match at the end. They're even better yeah. then. Yeah. They're really funny. The Blackjacks really beat the crap out of the New Age Outlaws for most of the match until Billy Gunn grabbed the chair and hit Bradshaw in the back with it when the referee wasn't looking and Road Dogg pinned him and they won.
I think that's great. I think this early having to cheat to win, but getting them to win every week is a great thing to do.
I can tell you for a fact, I was 13, 14 years old watching this, and I hated these guys. Exactly. Hated them. Loathed them. Every time they came out, I would go, oh, no, not these friggin' guys. So they did their job.
Yeah.
I hated them. After the match, the Blackjacks start beating up Billy and Road Dogg, and then the Godwins hit the ring because I guess the Godwins are teaming with the New Age Outlaws at Survivor Series. And then they go out and they get the Blackjacks cowboy hats as they punch the fucking tops of them out.
Again, when did the Godwins suddenly become faces again?
I don't know if new Blackjacks are supposed to be heels or baby faces. I don't know. So and they have like so many Survivor Series matches that they're like,
yeah,
people be out there and be like, oh, this guy's in this Survivor Series match, and I'm going, huh? when was that announced? The only Survivor Series matches that I know of that they announced are the Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, and Owen Hart versus Steve Austin. Otherwise, I have no idea what else is on the card. None.
There's got to be a couple of, at least one Survivor Series match, hasn't there?
Yeah, I would assume. And I assume the Nation would be involved in one, too. Yeah. They punch out the holes in the cowboy hats. The Headbangers run down. They don't do too much with them. They have a different boombox that has like yellow tape all over it, like making it seem as if they got the boombox from last week and taped it all back together.
Yeah.
Call me crazy, Glenn, but I don't think that the Headbangers are very tech savvy, and I don't think they can put the thing back together.
I wouldn't think so, no.
No. And yeah, I don't know. It was weird that they would just like, we got to put some tape on it, pal. So you fixed it last week. Why would they fix it? They didn't tell us that apparently the best way to get Commissioner Slaughter to do whatever you want him to do is just to beat the hell out of him because he's going to give Mankind his match versus Kane.
Yeah, stick a mandible claw down his throat and he'll give in.
That's right. So, I mean, if you want to be the World Wrestling Federation champion, just ask Sergeant Slaughter. If he says no, beat his ass, and then he'll have to. Then the lights go out, and the Undertaker's little brother, Kane, makes his way down to the ring with Paul Bearer. And bad news for JR, because he's the one who's got to fucking interview these crazy fucks.
I think I made my point perfectly clear. What does Kane have to do to get his message across? Mankind, you idiot. You're nothing but a little pebble on Kane's path to destruction. Undertaker, I told you that the reason that Kane is here is to make your life a living hell. Yes! A living hell, and you had the audacity to climb out of your hole last week and say that you're already living in hell. You don't have a clue, dead man. You don't know what living in hell is, but your little brother knows. He burned in hell's fire thanks to you, big brother. Role model, phenom, you're Undertaker. Undertaker, you'll live in hell until you step up and face your brother and meet your judgment day. Rest in peace. Ashes to
ashes. Ashes to ashes, yeah. The funniest thing about that when he called The Undertaker a role model, because a dead guy is going to be a role model.
It's lucky Kane had that mask on or that camera that ended up his nose.
I know, Jesus Christ, it was like a fucking a line of cocaine around her, Herb Abrams. It was going right up his nose. Yeah, so then we go from that to Shawn Michaels' ass.
Yeah. First of many times we will see Shawn Michaels' ass.
Yeah, they say they're going to, they say Bret Hart got to talk about Survivor Series match. So what does Shawn Michaels have to say about it? Rude's like, oh, he doesn't want to talk to you, McMahon. He wants to talk straight to Bret Hart himself. And then he pulls down his pants and shows us his ass. So, which they were like blocking it kind of, but we saw it too.
DX's, yeah.
And they keep making like, oh, you're cracking us up jokes and all that shit.
Yeah.
All the sophomore humor.
Again. Everybody that loves the Attitude Era, they were the target audience at that time for this sort of humor.
Well, we like to see asses, apparently, Glenn. Apparently. Speaking of asses, Mark Mero's here, and he's going to take a... I'm sorry. Mark Mero seems like a nice guy. I didn't mean that. It's that's the way to go.
I'm sure you met Sable's ass, didn't you?
Yes. Well, I don't know. I meant Flash Funk got a lot of ass, is what I meant to say. There's a young fan in the crowd. He's got a sign that says, Sable, please wait until I grow up. And yes, that was Brock Lesnar in the crowd. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it probably was.
It was a young Brock Lesnar in the crowd, people.
And that's all you can say about this match.
The funniest thing about this match is you can see in the crowd there ain't one fucking soul looking at the ring. They're all looking and taking pictures of Sable. No one even looked in the ring.
And she's playing up to him. She's there. She's waving and smiling and sticking her chest out and
twirling her whip thing around or whatever she's got. It's like Mark Merrill changed his wild man gimmick, but nobody told Sable. She's still a wild girl.
Yeah,
I don't like I said.
And everybody's going, thank God Mark Merrill's in the rigs. We don't have to watch this. We could just watch her.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about it. Yeah, no, I'm kidding. Yeah, like you said, besides talking about Sable, there's not really a whole lot you can say about this match. It's just total filler. And while Flash Funk can do some pretty cool things, this match was pretty forgettable. Mero uses his patented low blow and then hits his TKO.
That was quite a devastating move, that TKO thingy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm surprised that wasn't used more by people, you know?
Yeah.
If you don't know, it's like a fireman's carry. And then he kind of swings you into like a RKO almost.
Yeah.
So there we go. It's funny. Isn't the company that owns WWE, isn't it called TKO?
It is.
It is. They got it from Mark Mero. I'm taking it here. They got it from Mark Mero. We then get a sit down interview with Jim Ross and a man who returned last week. He no longer wants to be known as the man who was spending his day working hard on the go because then the clock keeps spinning too slow. But that's too bad for him because I'm always going to refer to him as that. And let's hear a little bit of what he's got to say, old Double J.
Jeff, you seem to have it all. So why did you leave the WWF, the company that seemingly made you a superstar?
Well, when I first came to the WWF, I had prepared my whole life for it. WWF was the big time. World Wrestling Federation, Titan Sports. Jeff Jarrett had arrived. And when I got here, all of a sudden Vince... just had a vision. He had a vision who he wanted Jeff Jarrett to be. I succeeded in spite of Vince, but he definitely put limitations on me. He tried to make me the character Double J. Me and Vince had a conversation 2 years ago before I left, and I said, Vince, Jeff Jarrett is the only person in the world that can be Double J, because that's your vision. But it just let me be Jeff. That is the night that I said, Vince McMahon, you will no longer run my life.
Well, with the country music character Double J and the WWF now behind you, Jeff, you signed a contract with WCW. But once there, you came to a very shocking realization.
Vince gave me an opportunity to be Double J. WCW gave Jeff Jarrett no opportunity. And I more or less had my spot going in the door, and when I left, it was the same spot. No ladder of opportunity.
Why was it that way?
If you're not one of Eric Bischoff's boys, if you don't have strong enough stroke, you're not in his clique. So you don't have the ladder of opportunity. You don't get the spotlight. A lot of people say, oh, WCW is built on has-beens and name recognition guys. Those guys, their track record speaks for themselves. They've been very successful in what they do. Put me and Shawn Michaels in the ring, and I'll put that match against any match in the world, Japan, WCW, anywhere. Your true in-ring ability does not count in WCW.
Well, there you go. It's funny that he's going to go back to WCW and win the world title many times over.
Yeah.
And he's not going to get the chance in WWF to do that because Steve Austin on top all the time, and Steve Austin won't work with him.
That's right. You know, talk about the grass is greener. He was winning titles in the WWF, got pissed off and went to the WCW. Wasn't winning titles, got pissed off, came back to the WWF, doesn't win titles, goes back to WCW.
Well, I know he was he's Intercontinental Champion, and he'll win the Intercontinental Championship again in his rerun here. And then I think he was like the U.S. champion for a short period, maybe in his short run in WCW, but I might be wrong on that one. But I think he was U.S. champion.
Yeah, but there was some belt that he had there, so.
Yeah, but it just seems like he always left the wrestler, whatever company he left, he always left in bad terms. But they also always took him back. So, before the main event is the Los Boricuas, which is going to be Savio Vega and Miguel taking on LOD, which is another strange main event for the show. You would think it would be Shamrock versus Brett, but the New Age Outlaws are out here to watch the main event as well. JR tries to get up to speak to them as to why they're out there, and they just blow them off. They just don't answer. They've also got the black broken hats with them. They're wearing them, which is hilarious.
They're wearing them around their collars. With collars, because they're holes in the top of them.
Yeah, it was fucking hilarious. I don't know. They go and get the LOD shoulder pads once the match starts, and they put them on. And I was surprised that LOD just didn't immediately stop what they were doing and go over there and start fighting them. Because you could clearly see that Hawk could see, I mean, the animal could see that they had the shoulder pads on, but he wasn't doing anything about it. And that didn't seem like LOD to me.
They tried to explain it away on commentary by saying that normally they have somebody that takes them out the back.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't be looking for them.
It didn't do enough to suspend my disbelief, Glenn. I was like, why aren't they doing something about this? It seems to me that the LOD should be doing
it. I thought so as well.
Oh, but these guys were funny. They're out there flexing for the crowd. They're flexing for each other. They popped me doing this with these goddamn fucking... that was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot to the match.
I was going to say, there was a wrestling match trying to break out unsuccessfully.
Yeah, never did quite broke out, did it? And then the Road Dog tries to trip Hawk, but Hawk reverses the Irish whip, and then he trips Miguel instead, which results in Hawk just immediately covering him for the win. So LOD and Los Boricuas, they all just start chasing the New Age Outlaws up the ramp into the backstage area.
And all that lacked was Yakety Sax.
Yeah. Cue the Benny Hill music. Yeah, it was like that. They tell us next week, Glenn, finally, mercilessly, we're going to get a light heavyweight tournament, Glenn. It's going to start next week.
Yeah, right.
Glenn doesn't believe it. We'll see what happens. And then we hear from a very sweaty, very angry Ahmed Johnson. Good luck to anyone trying to understand this, because I certainly don't.
I was going to say, I'm very unlucid.
Yeah, so good luck understanding.
316. What you did by putting your hands on me was entered the zone. My zone. See, my zone is kind of like an end zone. Once you're in there, you score. So you just scored on me. So now it's my turn to score on you. So Monday night, look out, because I'm Kevin the Gecko! My zone is kind of like an end zone.
What are you talking about?
He made it sound like Stone Cold Austin put himself upon Ahmed Johnson and scored in his zone. that was amazing. That was the best promo of Ahmed Johnson's career in my mind.
Oh, definitely. And what a way to go out.
Holy cow. Yeah, and that's the way the show goes off the air.
Yeah, see, I only watched this for the first time this afternoon. And I sat there at the end of it and thought, what the fuck?
I literally, like, I wasn't going to put the clip of it in there, but then I listened to him. I was like, that's too good not to include. You know, let's watch it one more time just because it's so much fun. We'll watch it.
16. What you did by putting your hands on me was entered the zone. My zone. See, my zone is kind of like an end zone. Once you're in there, you score. So you just scored on me. So now it's my turn to score on you. So Monday night, look out, because I'm Kevin the Gecko!
Oh my God!
keep that clip handy, because I think Mayor should see that on Friday.
Oh, the Mayor needs to see that. Yes, we need to.
before we do some do our business on Friday, the Mayor needs to see that.
Good Lord.
Something else.
So that's the end of that episode of Monday Night Raw.
I needed that laugh. Thank you, Ahmed.
Wow, that's great. Oh boy. So yeah, that was the end. Pretty good, pretty decent show. I would say I'd give it two thumbs up. I don't see how you couldn't. Well, then if I had three thumbs, I'd give it three thumbs up for that Ahmed promo at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really good.
What was that side? Why this was going on?
Yeah, yeah. Any other notes or anything else you wanted to say about this show before we put a
note
on this thing?
No, I just want to know what was going on WCW, why this was happening.
Don't you worry, Glenn, because I will tell you. The matches that we missed on WCW Nitro because we watched Raw instead. The opening match was a Cruiserweight Championship match. Rey Mysterio Jr. took on Dean Malenko. I'm sure that was an amazing match.
Ooh, that was really a cracker.
The man whose entrance was paid for more than he ever contributed to the wrestling business, Glacier, took on our good friend La Parca. Lex Luger battled Stevie Ray. Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Jericho. I'm sure that was good. Yeah, Raven defeated Scotty Riggs. And Diamond Dallas Page defeated Hulk Hogan in a match for the World Heavyweight Championship, but it was by disqualification. Disco Inferno took on Goldberg, but that ended in a no contest somehow. I don't know.
Not with Disco dying.
Unfortunately, Glenn, I mean,
it ended up with Disco dying. I would have watched that.
Unfortunately, yeah, we would have been upset that we didn't see that. Unfortunately, it did not lead to the death of Disco. He's still alive and kicking.
Yeah, I know.
Steiner Brothers defeated Public Enemy to retain the WCW World Tag Team Championships. And the main event of the evening for this show, Glenn, was Ric Flair versus Macho Man Randy Savage. Pretty good main event.
Yeah.
The ratings for this week still weren't very good in WWF's favor. WWF did a 2.29 and WCW did a 4.33. But both shows were down a good 60 points across the board because WCW did a 460 last week and WWE did a 93. So still not looking so good for the ratings for the WWF, but we'll see where it goes and see what happens.
We know where it goes and what happens, but so yeah.
Right. We'll see what happens in the year of 1997. I mean,
yeah.
We got one more Raw to review before the infamous Survivor Series 1997 show. So that'll be fun. That'll be out next week. Glenn, who do you need to plug before we get out of here?
The Unbooked Territory guy is doing the first and last of wrestling, Dan and Rob. They're also their side projects and Stuck into the Dadatory, which will be coming back soon and features an episode with me in it. And also, they're being the Gator Golf, being the elite. This week they were playing Uno.
Oh boy.
Yeah. To decide the number one contender to take on the champion for the title. Of course, there's the
Doctor Who podcast with Danny Inside. That's on SJP World Media.
Yeah, the new episode dropped this week. They've only got a couple more left of this series, this season, before they start on a new season. And of course, DDT Wrestling with DC and Doc, who just celebrated their 400th official episode.
Congratulations to those gentlemen on making 400 episodes. Not many podcasts get to 400.
No.
But the special ones do, Glenn. The ones who won't give up, we make it to 400, Glenn.
Yeah, we will.
So that's it for Glenn. Me, I've got to plug, of course, the Sportswire Radio. Make sure you check out Sportswire Radio. Give our buddy Thomas Bryce a follow on all the social media platforms. Just search Thomas Bryce. That's Thomas. You know how to spell Thomas. B-R-I-C-E. It's spelled just like it sounds. It's Thomas B. Rice is his name. I'm going to start calling him that. I hope he's okay with it. I'm going to start calling him Thomas B. Rice. He should be a rapper, and that could be his rap name. Thomas B. Rice?
Yeah.
I like it, pal. Yeah, and check out their website at sportswireradio.org. And make sure you give our buddy and our compadre, the mayor of Canton, a follow on the Twitter X machine. He does a meal with the mayor every Wednesday where he tries something new so you don't have to, or to find something new that you can maybe try yourself. You never know what he's going to try. It could be long cookies and pretzels, and it could be hockey pucks. You never know. You never fucking know with a meal with the mayor. So you got to tune in. That's every Wednesday. Give him a follow. Make sure you check out our WrestleMania 1 watch along. Part 3 is out right now. You can listen to the other 3 parts wherever you get your podcasts out. Of course, check out The Life and Times of Psycho Sid. Episode 27 is out now, where he takes on The Undertaker and Mabel while wrestling in the USWA. So check that out. And I don't think I have anything else to plug, Glenn. I think that is it. I think that is all. The only thing left to do is to Glenn to say goodbye.
Goodbye.